The earth turns into a dandelion, whose fragile seeds are blown away by a brief gust of wind. BBC Natural World.
High in the mountains of Pakistan lives a cat so elusive that it's rarely been filmed. Until 2004, when the BBC Planet Earth series showed the world the first images of a wild snow leopard hunting.
The snow leopard catches up with its prey on a sheer mountainside. It grabs a hold of the animal's haunches as it desperately tries to pull away.
For the men who filmed this shot, it marked the beginning of a love affair with the snow leopard.
I just looked straight into her eyes and she just caught mine. And I think that was, you know, love at first sight.
The leopard looks directly into the camera's lens.
Driven by this newfound passion, the two men returned, determined to get to know this almost mythical beast, this icon of the wilderness.
The leopard stalks an antelope, then leaps after it.
What they discovered went far deeper than they had ever expected, to the very heart of the cat's battle for survival.
The leopard jumped out, she fell down and fainted, and the leopard took off. He's saying that if the leopard comes back, I'll just have to shoot it.
This is the first film to go beyond the myth and tell the snow leopard's real story.
Snow Leopard, Beyond the Myth. Narrated by David Attenborough.
Unlike most people who go in search of endangered animals, Nisar Malik is not a biologist or a wildlife cameraman. Nisar is a journalist, and he's gained an intimate knowledge of these mountains and their people by working here for 20 years with foreign news crews.
Most of the news stories I was covering at that time related to Afghanistan and the tribal areas of Pakistan, the children of war, the front line between the Taliban and the Northern Alliance, and a lot of the opium and heroin trade that was taking place at that time.
Nisar is now returning to northern Pakistan for one of the biggest challenges of his life, to build on the tantalizing snow leopard material he helped capture for Planet Earth. This quest has brought him to the mountains of Chitral, part of the giant Himalayan range that stretches all the way to China.
Snowy crags.
No one knows how many snow leopards remain here. The cats are so rare and the terrain so challenging that many fear they will become extinct before anyone finds a way to count them. In winter, Chitral is cut off from the rest of the world by heavy snowfalls and rarely visited by outsiders. Accompanying Nisar is expert cameraman Mark Smith. Together, they plan to spend at least a year in pursuit of their dream, which means spending Christmas away from home.
I guess snow leopards is about the only thing that would make you come out. The thought that maybe just up there is still a snow leopard and you might just film it. So yeah, I guess it's the biggest draw you could possibly ever want.
Christmas morning, and Nisar prepares an unconventional meal.
And rather than just sitting around looking at the snow and the rest of it, I thought, have a big thumping breakfast today.
Has that got testicles in it?
It's got a heart, liver and kidneys.
Great. Slightly hungover, so it's not probably the most exciting thing.
Do you want beans?
No.
So little is known about these isolated valleys that the team's best chance of sighting a leopard is simply to cover as much ground as possible.
Snow falls in a remote valley.
Fresh snowfall covers all animal prints, making tracking difficult, but it does transform the valley into a fairy tale landscape.
As soon as it starts snowing and as soon as it starts looking like this, it just becomes a completely magical place.
What the team does discover is a haven for wildlife. Markhor are extremely rare mountain goats, but they seem abundant here.
A markhor stands on a rock, then a bird of prey.
This is an encouraging sign, as Markor are prime leopard prey.
A bird of prey soars through the driving snow, and a Markor peers down from a vertiginous rock.
After weeks of searching, there's no sign of the elusive cat, and as the snows get heavier, animals start to move down to the lower slopes.
A deer struggles through chest-high drifts of snow.
The animals are struggling. We can't get around much. I think it's time to beat a retreat. Get out of here.
They need to find a place where a leopard will come to them. But guessing the best location for a stakeout is almost as hard as finding a leopard. Nisar's news gathering skills will be needed. His local contacts may provide a lead.
Story is, if you tell the snow leopard that you are king of the jungle, it takes a step back and lets him go through.
As usual, plenty of stories, but nothing helpful. Finally, they get a tip-off. A snow leopard has been seen coming close to a nearby village.
In a jeep.
I just hope it's there when we get there. How fast can this car go?
Having spent weeks searching Pakistan's wildest frontiers, could the team really succeed in a place so accessible to humans?
Nisar greets a man with a hug.
For once, there is truth in the rumours.
Holy s***.
Mark squints through a camera lens.
The snow leopard is not only here, but out in full view.
It's basking on a rock.
It's just the most fabulous, fabulous feeling ever. Right in front of us is one of the most elusive creatures in the world, looking straight at us right now. Oh, here we go. Hello.
For years, scientists and filmmakers have tried to get close to the snow leopard and failed. But now, here was a snow leopard venturing into our world, no longer the stuff of myth and legend, but a living, breathing animal.
The snow leopard's thick cream fur is dappled with grey-brown spots. It steps down from the steeply sloping rock high above Mark and Nisar and arcs its back in a leisurely stretch, then springs sure-footedly onto another part of the mountain. Below, Mark's camera tracks its every move.
Day after day, Mark is able to film this consummate mountaineer, a creature utterly at home on these perilous slopes.
The leopard scales an almost vertical rock face, clinging with its powerful claws.
Her markings provide superb camouflage, whilst her giant paws and immense tail lend balance to some very precarious manoeuvres.
The creature's back feet scrabble for purchase, and it hauls itself upwards inch by inch.
A wild snow leopard relaxed in the presence of humans is completely unheard of.
A small crowd has gathered to look.
Why should an animal accustomed to roaming hundreds of miles keep returning to the same spot? Before Mark and Nisar can find the answer, she disappears.
The leopard slinks unhurriedly away. A bridge over a torrent.
A few days later, Nisar gets worrying news from the local village.
We've just got reports that a sheep herder out here had about 18 of his sheep and goat attacked by apparently an old leopard. And we're just going up to have a chat with them and see if there's any truth to the matter.
Perhaps the chance of an easy meal had lured the female leopard into the heart of the settlement.
He's saying when you get wounds like this, it's only the leopard that does that. And it's got very sharp incisions. But I'm still surprised it's so close to the population. I thought it must have been while they were grazing up on the mountains.
herdsman moves off his flock of shaggy goats.
The herdsmen of Chitral survive on the margins, especially in winter, and can't afford to lose their livestock for any reason. But predators also have an urgent need to feed, and they make no distinction between wild and domestic prey. As animals descend to escape the snows, these conflicts become heightened.
A pack of wolves travels down the mountain, then a flight of hawks.
As with many remote places, the notion that isolation has led to a perfectly preserved wilderness is simply untrue. The population is expanding, and the boundaries between wild and cultivated areas have become blurred, increasing the potential for conflict.
A pair of vultures tussle in the snow over a fragment of prey, as a cast of hawks scans the white landscape from their vantage point, drifting lazily in the sky.
When the female reappears, it becomes clear that the proximity of livestock is not the real reason she's here.
So I was concentrating on getting shots of a snow leopard, and this owl stood by my side. And he went, "There's another one." And I was going, "Shut up." He's like, "It's not..." And he said, "There's another snow leopard." I was going, "What?" And he'd seen the snow leopard moving inside the cave.
And then suddenly, from that hole, pops out this face. And you could see it was a juvenile. It just had this lost look about it. And I was in fits. I mean, I was like jumping up and down. And Mark was going, oh my God, let me frame her.
The leopard dozes in sunlight, while the almost fully grown cub stalks up to her. The female rouses.
The next time Mark and Nisar find them, the young male cub has grown in confidence and is venturing further from the cave. He seems to have taken a dislike to the local magpies.
The cub bounds around the rocks in pursuit of a magpie. Two take refuge in a scrubby leafless tree and sit there chattering as if taunting him. He springs up the tree after them.
He was learning. Everything he was doing, he was mimicking the mother. Now, she doesn't like magpies either, but he was looking at them as playful things. She probably considers them, you know, a nuisance.
There is playtime, and then there are times when a young snow leopard needs to pay proper attention.
Whenever she went hunting, there was this amazing communication between them where she'd take a few steps, he'd start following, and then she'd just turn around and look at him, like, and he'd just look at her and then just slink away and go back and sit in the cave. Obviously, there was a training going on which was not hands-on. It was, look, but don't come near me.
A one-year-old cub needs as much food as its mother. With two mouths to feed, the female is under pressure to kill regularly. News of an even more brazen attack on local livestock is of great concern to Nisar.
This is the lady. When she came in, she pushed the door open, and the minute she did that, the leopard jumped out. It pushed her back. She fell down and fainted. And the leopard took off. This one's actually been eaten from the back. It's pretty gory right now.
Nisar knows a killing spree so close to where the mother is hunting is dangerous. She'll be blamed even if she's not the culprit.
I've asked him that if he goes up again with his livestock and the leopard comes back, what is he going to do? And he's saying that I'll just have to shoot it.
A herd of mountain goats.
With so much at stake, it's a relief when Mark gets concrete evidence that the mother can provide for her cub from the wild population of Markor.
The leopard is dragging a dead Markor along by the scruff of its neck. She pauses for a moment.
Her prey weighs as much as she does. and dragging it up a slope as steep as this must take enormous effort. It's imperative she gets the carcass back to her den so that her cub can feed undisturbed by scavengers. But a single Markhor won't feed the pair for long. Within a couple of days, she'll need to hunt again.
Sitting with her cub, the female stretches and yawns.
Over the next few weeks, Mark and Nisar spend long periods with the mother and cub and start to build a detailed visual record of snow leopard family life.
The two traverse the rocky ground. Then the mother drags another dead Markhor. Yet another escapes at dazzling speed.
By capturing the pair on film, Mark and Nisar have started to bring the snow leopard from the realm of myth into the land of the living.
The leopards nuzzle one another.
Just as the crew are starting to realize how challenging it is for a leopard to survive in this terrain, filming is cut short by a catastrophe, one that shows how precarious all life is in these mountains.
Nisar.
I was actually starting to enjoy being here with the crew and seeing the leopard. Pakistan had one of its largest earthquakes ever in the mountain areas. Close to 100,000 people died in that. The suffering and the kind of horror was beyond belief. We lost a whole generation of children. I mean, approximately 40,000 kids died because this earthquake struck in the morning and schools had just started. I mean, you know, I've got children and I've seen children being pulled out of rubble and stuff like that, and it was horrific.
Helicopters.
But it had to be responded to, and people like myself or anyone who had any expertise had to respond to that calamity.
With his unrivaled knowledge of these remote regions, Nisar is ideally qualified to lead a team of mountain survival experts and deliver aid directly to those most in need.
Sacks of supplies are unloaded from a helicopter. A group of local people wait listlessly in the snow, wrapped in blankets.
Every winter is hard for mountain people, but the earthquake had deprived them of even the basic amenities they needed to survive.
Filming the snow leopard have been a high point of my life. Responding to people in need, and they are my people. I mean, how could you ignore that?
Four local men sit in the open around a campfire, and another two trudge through the snow. Then, an aerial view of the valley.
6 months later, and the humanitarian disaster has finally begun to ease. The team returns, hoping to catch up with their snow leopards before the cub is weaned. But it's now summer, and the chances of finding them at this time of year are not good.
In winter, we've established that it has a certain pattern, and you can sort of follow that, following the herds of goat and stuff like that. But I think summer's anyone's guess.
It's pretty unknown. It is completely, you know, as wildlife sheets go. There's very little known about it.
With scorching temperatures in the valleys, most animals head back up the slopes in search of cooler weather and greener pastures. What might be an easy journey for the wildlife requires a major expedition for Mark and Nisar, who will need a much larger team to support them over the 8-week trip ahead.
The team is over 20 strong.
We'll cross that pasture, go over, and then go straight down. And then we go behind these peaks and see that bowlish looking thing, that dark patch way back there. That's the final camp. And if you went a 2-day walk from there, you're in Afghanistan. You can almost sense why the snow leopard would be there. It's got to be really isolated.
No film crew had ventured here before.
Wearing only flimsy plimsolls, the team tramp over the sharp rocks.
One of the main reasons why documentary makers haven't come out and filmed the snow leopard is because Pakistan has an image abroad, it's been exploited for all the wrong reasons.
This is supposed to be the easy part.
We're 30, 40 kilometers from the Afghan border. You know, Al-Qaeda's been there, the Taliban have been there. I've done stories on those things. But there is so much more we have to offer the world, and no one's taking the trouble to find out about that. We're 150 million people out here, and we're not terrorists. We have some of the most hospitable people out here. We have amazing natural history. And this is a great opportunity to use the snow leopard as an ambassador to show that there is so much more that we have to offer.
Bent double under the weight of their baggage, the group trudges over the loose scree and up steep, rough slopes, while the baking sun beats down mercilessly.
A week into their journey, and the terrain was taking its toll.
It humbled us. It was grueling. It was really difficult. Everything is so steep. There's no paths. There's rockfalls. There's mudslides. I mean, it was really dangerous.
Nisar is standing on top of an escarpment.
The team are heading for a high-altitude meadow, rumoured to be full of marmots, ideal leopard prey.
Men clear away dead branches.
Nisar establishes a base camp some distance away so as not to disturb the wildlife. They're optimistic that a place with such easy pickings will be a magnet for predators of all kinds.
That sounds like a good marmot field up there. That sounds really good. If you know, there's a concentration of food for something, you're going to get something coming in. So let's try that.
Okay.
The magnitude of the task ahead is felt by all.
The men gaze up at the mountains around them. A cloud swirls over a mountain peak like smoke. The blazing sun behind it makes it appear as if the peak is on fire.
I'm like a worried mother. My son's leaving home.
Mark goes on ahead with two companions to help him carry the equipment.
Up here, animals are not used to seeing humans. Mark will have to conceal himself by building a hide. Now, all he can do is wait.
The speeded up shadows of clouds race across the mountain slopes.
As the weeks pass, it becomes clear that these meadows are not populated by thousands of marmots. In fact, only a handful live here. And even those don't do much.
There's a marmot on a rock in front of me. It's been there about half an hour. And in that time, it's moved its head twice and its leg once.
The tubby little marmot stands with one forefoot in the air.
You have to go through so much just to get close to them because they're very, very nervous. They're like the insurance salesman of the animal world. You know, they just don't do anything without checking everything out first.
With the rumours of a leopard nirvana appearing greatly exaggerated, Nisar hunts for any clue he can find.
It's not even a needle in a haystack because we don't even know if there is a needle. The haystack's big.
A barren mountaintop, then clouds roll through a blue sky.
2 weeks on, and it's clear there are no snow leopards in the area. Mark's frustration at only having marmots to film is finally beginning to show.
I hate the marmots. They're just sort of lazy layabouts, sit around all day in the sun, and occasionally stand up and alarm loudly. Usually in my hide, which, as far as I can see, is perfectly all right. But they don't seem to think so. The alarm call is so piercing, it physically hurts your ears. When they get really fed up, they run down the burrows and they alarm in the burrows. So hopefully they'll be deafening themselves down in the burrows.
A marmot shrieks, displaying long chisel-like incisor teeth on its top and bottom jaws.
With nothing to focus snow leopard activity, the difficulty of even seeing one becomes all too apparent.
Now you can see why it is so impossible to see this animal. Where do you begin? Where do you begin?
The stark grey mountains stretch to the horizon in every direction.
I'd love people to see this image of Pakistan. It's not made up, it's real. Sadly, very few people spend their time trying to project this.
The mountains are scarred by ancient weathering.
Their 8-week slog comes to an end and proves fruitless. But Nisar remains philosophical.
We had to go out and see for ourselves because we just had stories and rumors. And if we just ignored them, you never know what we would have missed. So we had to go out and see. And in a way, it was essential to put the story together, to piece everything together, that it's not necessary that you will see her in that habitat in summer. But the fact is, you have to try so that you have a better understanding.
Clouds whirl around the peaks.
With the onset of winter, heavy snows threaten. Mark and Nisa return, desperate to catch up with their female leopard. The signs are good. Markor have begun their annual retreat into the valleys, and the team think the leopard will follow.
Mark and Nisar carry their equipment down a slope. A single Markor, then a leopard, pads into view.
Reports of an increase in leopard sightings have also brought a team of scientists to Chitral.
Cables are ratcheted into place.
By laying traps higher up at the head of the valley, they hope to catch and collar a snow leopard as it begins its descent.
A scientist hides a trap with earth and lays a snare.
But Mark and Nisar's instinct is to target the lower slopes. It's been a year since they saw the female, and now that her cub is independent, she will no longer be tied to one area and will be free to follow her prey.
A Markor is silhouetted on the mountain.
What's more, the Markor are entering a busy period in their social calendar, one that will make them far more vulnerable to attack. It's the start of the mating season. Competition between males is fierce.
Males hurl themselves at each other, locking their long spiraled horns in battle and pushing each other down the mountain slopes.
With the biggest males preoccupied, the younger males might have a chance to sneak off with a female.
A juvenile absorbed in the process of mating is suddenly butted off his conquest by a large male and topples off a ledge. Two large males roll down a slope, their horns entangled. They disengage for a moment before rejoining battle.
All in all, the Markor are thoroughly distracted. It's a great opportunity for their snow leopard. Surely she will come.
Well, I don't know, this time of afternoon, there should be. The Markor should be just starting to come down. Maybe they'll come down to the river.
Mark! And, leopard!
Leopard! Quick, quick, get the legs and the bag.
Mark shoulders his camera and races to Nisar.
Where is she?
Up there on that rock. Just sitting up there.
Mark quickly sets up his camera.
She's got a collar on.
Oh, no.
She's been tagged.
As the snow leopard study was far from the filming site, Mark and Nisar had not considered the possibility that their cat would be the first to be captured.
I see the leopard just up there, and she's just gone into hunting mode. And it's blatantly obvious. She's just started to move now. Blatantly obvious. You can see the collar as she moves. I mean, I don't know how she's going to catch anything, because that's so obvious, even to us.
This could be Mark's chance to film a hunt. But would the collar handicap a predator that relies on camouflage?
The collar is wide and white. The leopard is attempting to stalk some markhor.
Well, the leopard has seen a small group of markhor below her, and she's trying to work out the best way to get to them, as far as I can see. Amazing.
The leopard begins to flow sinuously down a slope.
It's exactly where we filmed her before. This is the point where she either blows it, which she usually does, or she actually makes the kill.
The animal creeps closer, but stops for a moment to roll on its back.
Is this amazing or what?
Yeah, it's incredible. What I really need is for you to tell me how close markhor are to her.
They're about 50 meters or less. The markhor is coming running right here.
I've got you.
Okay,
I guess. About to go. She's moving.
Yeah.
She's moving.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready.
Okay. It's about 25 meters, 20 meters. 4 or 5 other markhor coming the same way.
Are they moving towards her?
Yes, not more than 15 meters. Coming closer. Now that one's right below her. The little ones are coming in. Now she's 5 meters, not more. Here she comes. She's coming up the rise. She's like 3-4 meters from her. Here we go. Oh, God damn you.
They blew it. She blew it.
She blew it.
Oh. She seemed really slow.
Yeah.
She's off again.
Markhor haven't really gone very far. They're just the other side.
Is there still one there? She's looking at something. She's definitely looking at something.
There's a markhor just down here between the trees. This time she's got a better perch. Here she goes.
The big cat inches down a steep, rocky slope, its head cocked to keep an eye on its prey. Mark tracks it with his camera as it picks up speed and springs to higher ground. The markhor flees, but within seconds, both hunter and prey are lost to sight behind a tree, to Mark's frustration.
No.
The markhor splashes into the river and swims to freedom.
Oh, this is deja vu, my friend. I mean, like, got another markhor that's gone in the water.
The markhor's head bobs above the surface.
Wow.
What is going on? This is mad.
Collaring a wild snow leopard is a remarkable breakthrough for science, but it leaves Nisar with mixed feelings.
Seeing her doesn't make me feel good.
Not a good feeling.
I'm ecstatic to see her, but I'm sad to see her this way.
The leopard's ears are tagged with bright blue markers.
News of the first sighting since her capture brings the head scientist, Tom McCarthy, down to the filming site. He needs to gather information for his study firsthand. Mm-hmm.
Big tree. Above that, there's that rock.
All right.
The first time we saw her with the collar, she was just sitting there. Beautiful, you know, backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
His visit is a chance for Nisar to understand why Tom is using such an intrusive method to study his cat.
So this study will give us an unprecedented amount of information on snow leopards that we've lacked for a long time. We try to get a better idea about some of the basic questions like how big is their home range? How do they react when people enter their habitat? How do they relate to livestock in their habitat? And these are really basic questions. And the only way to really answer them is to use telemetry.
Tom hopes that over the next year, data will be uploaded from the collar to orbiting satellites so that he can track the cat's movements remotely. So limited is our knowledge of snow leopards that any data from the collar will be invaluable.
When I see her out here now with a collar on, I see a wild snow leopard doing what a wild snow leopard does, but just sharing that information with us so that we can do a better job of conserving meld snow leopards everywhere.
Only recent developments in satellite technology have made this study possible. But like many pioneering projects, things don't go exactly to plan.
The clouds drifting over the mountains darken as night falls. In daylight, hands remove a casing from a hypodermic needle.
News arrives that Nisar's leopard has been accidentally recaptured. A dart containing anesthetic will be needed to remove her from the snare with the minimum of harm.
The leopard eyes the approaching men warily and thrashes, trying to free herself from the snare. A scientist moves to within a few feet of her, aims the dart gun, and fires, hitting her in the haunch.
It was a real shock to see her struggling like this. Even though this was for science, part of me just wanted to set her free.
A loop of wire is tight around the leopard's front paw. Her ice-blue eyes stare.
At close quarters, her presence is bewitching.
One of the most amazing parts of the trapping was the reaction of the locals towards her. You could see them gently brushing the snow off her fur, patting her.
The surprise capture is a chance for the locals to see her up close and for researchers to change her collar for one with a fresh battery. The cuts are cleaned with antiseptic swabs to lessen the chance of infection, and she's kept warm when at her most vulnerable. Every remaining snow leopard is precious.
One of the men examines the claws on her back paw. Another straddles her, holding her head firmly in his hands.
Here was this mystical creature, a legend, suddenly surrounded by humans who were trying to pin her down and shackle her. And yet, there's a magic that this beast gives off. It was strange to see humans trying to tame nature, trying to tame this animal.
The leopard is crammed into a small wire cage. Surrounded by scientists, she pushes her paws vainly against the wire, rocking rhythmically.
After she had been asleep in the cage for 8 hours, the researchers were confident the tranquilizer had worn off.
Standing behind the cage, a scientist gingerly lifts up the door at the front. For a moment, the leopard doesn't move. Then she bolts out and sprints through the snow up to the safety of the mountains.
She seemed to have made a full recovery, but the recapture had sown fresh doubts in Nisar's mind.
Tom, are you afraid of the risks that are involved? Does it justify it?
If I didn't feel that it justified what we're doing, I wouldn't do it. You've become emotionally attached to this animal. As a biologist, I know very few people in my position that aren't very emotional about the animals that we have spent our lives trying to protect. For me to go out there and put a collar on a cat is probably as rough on me as it is that cat. I don't do it lightly. I think of nothing but her safety. And I know that, yes, she's sacrificing a little bit. And she's wearing an ugly radio collar. And she's going to carry it for a year, maybe 2 or 3 years. But she's doing this for the betterment of the species, for the betterment of snow leopards here in Pakistan, for the betterment of snow leopards all the way across their range. But I know that if we do this, we have a much better chance of saving all of these cats.
But the project will only be a success if the female behaves naturally, unhampered by the collar. If not, the data will be worthless. A few days later, Mark begins to recognize behaviors in her that he had seen prior to the collaring.
And about 2:30 in the afternoon, she went off to a cliff and waited there.
The leopard's colouring blends with the rock as she waits.
There's no mark all around at all. And then suddenly you could start to see a few boulders rolling down. And there's one mark all was coming down the cliff.
The leopard slinks from the rock, keeping low to the ground.
And she heard the boulders, and she moved around this cliff and took up this position slightly higher up, and the markhor sort of went down away from her and then down towards this gully. And as she came down the scree slope, she did this rolling thing which she does. She'll roll right over on her back like a domestic cat. When she does this rolling, you know that she's into a serious hunt. We don't quite know why it is. Maybe it's to kind of mask the scent or change the colour. So she went further down, and she got to this point, and she was looking down at the markhor. And the markhor just went over the lip of the gully. And as soon as he'd gone over the lip, she charged down the hill. Really long run.
The snow leopard puts on a burst of speed as she reaches the flatter ground.
Got to this bush and hid in this bush. I was following her down, and I got to this point, and I, because of this black and white viewfinder in the camera, I couldn't really see what was going on. And in fact, the markhor was just right in the middle of the frame. I couldn't see her at all. So I was like, oh, where's she gone? Where's she gone? Move the camera. And at that moment, she charging out of the bush and took him out, jumped right on top of him, and they disappeared down to the bottom of this gully. She had made a successful kill, and so even with this white collar on, you know, she was obviously still able to survive. So that was quite a relief to see she could do that. That was good.
For the longest time, I was really upset. You know, I just couldn't see the justification of all of this. But now, having seen her hunt with a collar on, it's almost like she's happy. She seems okay, and it almost seems worthwhile.
The successful hunt is a turning point for Mark and Nisar. It becomes clear their photographic record will be more important than they had ever imagined. The researchers will be able to use these images alongside the data from the collar. They're far more informative together than either is alone.
A magpie cheekily pecks at the leopard's tail as she lounges by her kill. She gets up and lunges at it, but it flies to safety. Two other magpies plague her, and she chases them off.
Using this combination of science and film, we're finally starting to understand this most enigmatic of creatures.
The leopard returns to her prey, seeing off an obstinate magpie.
A window on the life of the snow leopard has finally been opened.
The three magpies perch a prudent distance away.
Over the next few weeks, another benefit of the collar becomes clear. In the past, the team had to rely on instinct or rumours to find the leopard. Now they can use hard data from the collar. For the first time, the team can actually follow her.
Mark, Nisar, and an assistant have climbed amongst the rocks. Mark looks through binoculars. The leopard is making her way over some large boulders.
The information from the researchers leads them back to the local village where Mark films her sleeping next to a fresh kill. But the camera reveals her prey to be a wild markhor, not a goat. What is learnt from studying snow leopards now may help to save them in the future. But Nisar knows his leopard faces an immediate risk from the local villagers. He decides to visit the herdsman whose goats were killed last winter.
People like this need the support. They need to understand that there is a bigger picture. These people exist day to day. They have nothing. And as a Pakistani, I can empathize with them, that I can see their dilemma. You have to take these people into the fold if the snow leopard and the rest of these animals have to survive here.
A laptop.
By showing the villagers images and explaining the scientific study, Nisar hopes to make people aware of the value of their feline neighbour.
Says, actually, this is my enemy. And then he looked at it again and he said, well, no, actually, that's my friend now.
This is their heritage, it's their natural world, it's their natural wildlife out here. If they're not involved, nothing will work. We must give ownership of the heritage back to these people.
Women and children crowd around the laptop to see the images of the leopard.
By filming such remarkable images, Mark and Nisar have begun to lift the veil from this almost mythical creature. They set out to tell the story of an individual snow leopard, but in the event, achieved far more than that.
Who would have believed during our time here, the first snow leopard colouring project in 20 years would not only come to here, but also colour our snow leopard? The issues involved in that are far more interesting than just trying to take a pretty picture of a snow leopard. We're all now involved in a much more profound kind of understanding of the conservation issues than when we first came here.
If you want to create awareness, if you want these people to feel that they belong and the animal belongs to them, they must share in that. So whether you show it to them in the form of a photograph or on a mobile phone or whatever it is, it's essential that that be shared with them.
My wish and hope that they see the snow leopard for real rather than on a mobile phone. That's what all the work should translate into. That should be something that they look forward to in the future. Not just this image, but the real thing.
Children gaze at the image on Nisar's phone, and the leopard scales a vertical cliff.
I'm aware of the fact that our snow leopard will be used and exploited, whether it's for science or for tourism or to promote Pakistan's image. But if I'm honest with you, for me personally, she's touched me on a much deeper personal level. That's something that demands that I come back and look after her the way she's looked after me.
The snow falls on the great cat.
Next week, Natural World follows Brazilian biologist Carolina Vargas as she raises an orphaned giant otter and teaches it to survive in a world fraught with danger.